Hi everyone, it's Melanie here, and what a year it's been. We are now well into our fourth year of the podcast, we have finished our books, and we have created Story Nerd courses. And Valerie and I are going to take, I think, a well-deserved break over the Christmas and New Year period. But as we head into 2026, we'd like to plant a seed. The fastest way to write a book in 2026 is to start with a first draft that is so strong it'll knock your reader's socks off. And our Story Trinity course is designed to teach you how to do it. So for more information, visit storynerd.ca/courses. And at Story Nerd, we give you the power to write a best-selling book. What you do with it is up to you. All right, our archive episode this week is Doubt. This quiet, character-driven story shows us how to craft perfect conflict triangles and create narrative drive. If you master these techniques, you will be well on your way to writing compelling stories. Happy listening. If you want to write stories your readers will love, there are three things you need to do. Understand storytelling principles, see how other writers have applied those principles, and then use them in your own work. Here on the Story Nerd podcast, our goal is to demystify story theory. We'll help you with the first two steps so that you can get started with the third. I'm Melanie Hill, writer, editor, and poet, and I help writers find solutions to their story problems so they can finish their novels.
And I'm Valerie Francis. I'm a writer and literary editor, and I teach women how stories work so they can finish their books faster and without the frustration.
On today's episode, Valerie pitched Doubt so that we can study conflict triangles. This 2008 film was written and directed by John Patrick Shanley, based on his play Doubt, A Parable, which won both a Pulitzer Prize and a Tony Award. Of course, there will be spoilers because we can't talk about the movie without talking about the movie. And please help other writers find our show by leaving a rating and review. For Apple Podcast listeners, you can do it right from your phone. Simply go to the show's landing page and scroll to the bottom. It's that simple. All right, Valerie, I think I know why you chose this movie this week, especially as our introduction to story triangles. So why don't you take it away and tell us what you found or the theory behind this particular area of study?
You got it. Okay. As Melanie said, I am studying a concept called conflict triangles this season. And I honestly cannot remember where I learned about it. I have no idea if there are other names for it. I haven't read it in a theory book. I know someone told it to me, and I kind of just jumped in and started to do my own research. If I had to guess, I would say the source is probably Robert McKee, Stephen Pressfield, or Sean Coyne. Now, here's the thing. We already know about the conflict triangle, and we understand it, and we use it, but in a very limited sense. We've all heard of a love triangle, right? I mean, we use them in stories, love stories all the time, whether that's the main genre of the book or film, or whether it's a subplot. But conflict triangles apply to all stories, regardless of the genre. And it's a really neat concept because the bottom line here is that when you're using conflict triangles, it makes the story a lot more interesting for the reader, and it makes it a lot easier for you to write. Easy being a relative term, of course. All right, so the main conflict in a story is between the protagonist and the antagonist, right? Fine, we all understand that. But if that's all we got, then our story is like a tug of war, right? Going back between the two of them, back and forth between the two of them. And thanks to the work that Lisa Cron has done in Wired for Story, we already know that we are wired to naturally look for setups and payoffs. We're wired to look for patterns in stories. I talked all about that last season. Well, if there are only two entities in the conflict, the protagonist and the antagonist, the pattern will be very easy to predict. And that means that the story will get really boring really fast. And not only that, but the story's premise, if there's only these two poles, antagonist, protagonist, push and pulling back and forth, if that's all we have, it's very likely that the story's premise is not strong enough to sustain a whole novel. You're going to run out of things to write about. So if you've ever sat there and thought, how am I going to fill up all these pages? How am I going to get to 80,000 words? Or if you're writing historical fiction or maybe a fantasy or sci-fi where it's an imaginary world entirely, how are you going to get to 120,000 words or 100,000 words? If that is something that has been on your mind, have a look at the conflict in your story because you might find a solution using conflict triangles. When you introduce conflict triangles, suddenly your story is going to have a whole lot more depth. The tension will increase and the whole narrative will become more compelling. Now, please do not underestimate how difficult it is to catch a reader's attention in the first place and then hold it all the way to the end of a novel. It is exceedingly difficult. It's difficult for a movie too, and those guys have spectacle on their sides. You know, the Marvel Universe has Chris Hemsworth's abs to help hold our attention. All we have is black text on a white page. So we really have to make the best use we can of the tools that we have, and conflict triangles is one of those tools. So the idea behind it is pretty simple. Conflict happens when characters disagree about something. Two characters disagreeing doesn't give us enough material to sustain a whole novel. It might not even sustain a novella, depending on the setup of your story. If there are four people disagreeing about something, from an execution point of view for you as the writer, it can be a lot to juggle. Like those are a lot of plates to spin. So we can kind of get confused and overwhelmed by trying to juggle the four characters, or we end up grouping them into two teams, which again just gives you those two poles, right? An antagonistic team and a protagonistic team. Three people is a sweet spot. When I first chose Doubt, I mean, honestly, I did it because it's a movie that's been on my TBW list forever. I knew what the premise of the story was, but I didn't know anything more about that. After watching it the first time, honestly, I was thrilled that I chose it because I think it's amazing. And it's a really good example of conflict triangles. So when I started to do a little bit of research on it, I mean, it was no surprise to me at all that this thing won a Pulitzer and a Tony and was nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay. It makes perfect sense to me. All right, so let's talk about the movie. It's a short movie with a small cast, and yet I found 8 conflict triangles. 8! The main conflict is between the protagonist, Sister Aloysius, and the antagonist, Father Flynn. And they disagree about whether Father Flynn is sexually assaulting Donald Miller. That's a pretty significant disagreement. And Donald Miller is a 12-year-old boy who is the school's first black student. So right there, in the premise of the story, we have the very first triangle. And that is Sister Aloysius, Donald, and Father Flynn. Now, Donald is never questioned, and he never speaks directly to what he does or doesn't do with Father Flynn. However, he is still a point on the triangle because he has a stake in this issue. Donald is new to the school and has no friends. He's an outsider there, and because he's gay, he's also an outsider in the community. At the beginning of the film, it appears that Donald looks up to Father Flynn and enjoys being an altar boy. He expresses an interest in wanting to be a priest, and in fact, the priesthood might be his way to survive the society that he has been born into. His relationship with Father Flynn is very important to him because this priest is either his salvation or his nightmare. So that's the triangle. Three people, who all have a vested interest in a particular topic, and they all have different opinions on the topic. All right, so at the midpoint of the film, we have the scene where Sister Aloysius confronts Father Flynn about her suspicions. This is a masterclass in scene design and dialogue. And there's not a lot of movies that we as novelists can turn to for help with dialogue. And I think the reason this movie has so much to offer is because it's an adaptation from a play. And playwrights, all they have is dialogue. If you think our job as novelists is challenging with just text on a page, a playwright's is even harder because they don't even get description or, you know, any of those types of things or point of view, none of that. All they have is the dialogue. Amazing. So in this scene, they are in Sister Aloysius's office and Sister James is there too. The three of them, Sister Aloysius, Sister James, and Father Flynn, form another conflict triangle. And believe it or not, the staging of this scene is so clever that it places these three characters in a triangle at the height of the action. Now, they're talking about Donald, so this lights up that first conflict triangle that I mentioned. It also lights up a third triangle that was established earlier in the film, and that continues all the way to the end of it. And that is the conflict between Sister Aloysius, Donald, and Sister James. Now, there's another scene that I want to draw your attention to, and that is when Mrs. Miller is meeting with Sister Aloysius. And Mrs. Miller is, of course, Donald's mom. Sister Aloysius explains her concerns about Donald and Father Flynn, expecting Mrs. Miller to be outraged. I mean, that makes sense, right? A mother finds out her child is possibly being sexually assaulted. You expect her to just lose her mind. And Mrs. Miller is upset. There's no question about it. But she does not demand justice. Instead, she says that if the priest is sexually assaulting her son, that it will only be until June. To her, it's better for Donald to be assaulted and graduate from that school because a graduation from that school will give him a better chance at further education, which means a better job, which means the possibility of a better life. It's a short film, but it's a heavy film. Even though there are only two characters in this scene, four new conflict triangles are in play. Four new ones. And that's in addition to this main conflict triangle between Sister Aloysius, Donald, and Father Flynn. That's the story level conflict triangle. All right, so the four new triangles are as follows. First, we have Sister Aloysius, Donald, and Mrs. Miller. This is the main conflict in this scene, and the two women are disagreeing about what they suspect is happening to Donald and what should be done about it, if anything. Then we have Mrs. Miller, Donald, and Father Flynn. So Mrs. Miller isn't happy about what Father Flynn might be doing, but her decision to act against Father Flynn or not is not an easy one to make. The third new triangle in this scene is Sister Aloysius, Father Flynn, and Mrs. Miller. Father Flynn sees Sister Aloysius talking to Mrs. Miller in the office. He knows what it's about. He knows that his future is in jeopardy, whether he's guilty of what he's accused of or not. And then we have Mrs. Miller, Donald, and Mr. Miller. Mrs. Miller reveals that Donald's father beats him and that losing his position as an altar boy resulted in one of his worst beatings. So in this idea of a triangle, the third character can actually be off the page. Doesn't have to be present in that scene. But their presence is felt, maybe because they're being talked about or because the situation that they are talking about has an impact on that third character in some way. That third character has a vested interest in the topic for some reason or another. And often you'll have two characters who are pushing and pulling against the third. So, for example, when you have Sister Aloysius talking to Father Flynn and calling him out for what she thinks he is doing, you can perceive it if you want as a tug of war. But I kind of, in my mind, I visualize it as Sister Aloysius having a hold of one of Donald's arms and Father Flynn having a hold of the other of Donald's arms. And he's sort of being tugged back and forth between the two of them, right? That's the, it doesn't happen in the story. I'm not saying it literally happened. I'm saying in order to imagine how this triangle works, two characters are pushing and pulling and tugging and influencing that third character in some way. All right, hopefully that makes sense. The final conflict triangle that I found in this film is between Sister James, her eighth grade class, and Sister Aloysius, because Sister Aloysius is evaluating Sister James's ability as a teacher. The kids are also testing Sister James, which means she's got it coming at her from both sides, which is exactly, you know, the what I was trying to get at a minute ago with the push and pull and tugging of Donald, right? Like here, it's Sister James who's in the middle between her students and her boss. So the idea behind conflict triangles is that the tension isn't just moving in two directions, right? Back and forth between the protagonist and the antagonist. By adding a third character to the conflict, the tension moves in six ways, believe it or not, and that's back and forth between each of the three characters. So that gives you a lot more to play with as an author. Suddenly, the plot is richer and it's more intense, and that means the reader will be a lot more interested in it. And you've got more ideas to explore in your story, which now means filling up 80,000 words of a story that's interesting and that has tension and conflict and that escalates the stakes. Suddenly now, these things just naturally start to arrive in your story because there's more things you can do with the conflict in your story. So, I mean, if there are eight triangles, as there are here in Doubt, and each one offers six ways to create tension, that gives us 48 ways that tension can be pushed and pulled throughout the story. I mean, holy cow, right? That, I mean, that's pretty amazing. It is no wonder that this story was nominated for and won so many prestigious awards. It doesn't surprise me at all. All right, so that's all I have to say about conflict triangles for this week. Melanie, you're studying narrative drive this season, another one of my favorite topics. How did you make out this week?
Well, I think I made out okay. I'm studying this because I've got a few theories in my head about how narrative drive works. And what I'm really trying to test this season is, does it work at a global level, at a scene level, and are the techniques that you use to create narrative drive different throughout the story, depending on what it is that you're trying to do or where it occurs? So narrative drive, and I'll summarize it in the way that I understand it, is a combination of craft techniques that create curiosity and or concern in the reader. And this generation of emotion moves a story forward. So for the sake of simplicity, imagine a scale. On the far left side is curiosity and on the right is concern. Moving left or right on the scale varies the degree of curiosity and concern a reader has about a story or is in a story. Authors create curiosity or concern in readers with the information that they provide, but that information is relative to the point of view character. So the three types of information relative to the point of view character are mystery, when the character knows more than the reader, suspense, when the character and the reader know the same, and dramatic irony, when the reader knows more than the point of view character. Now, mystery inspires curiosity, so it sits on the far left side of the narrative drive scale. And suspense is a mix of curiosity and concern, so it sort of sits in the middle of that scale. And dramatic irony is all about concern, because the reader knows what is lying in wait or the outcome of that particular thread of story. So there isn't any curiosity about events with dramatic irony, only concern for the characters. So therefore, dramatic irony sits on the far right of the scale. Now, doubt has examples of all three types of narrative drive this week. However, the dominant device used in doubt is mystery, because the writers deliberately keep information from the viewer. And this is a thematic choice because the film examines the relationship between certainty and doubt. And it's doubt about people's motives, their actions, their faith in institution, God, and power structures. So there's a whole range of things that are covered off in this movie, and I echo Valerie's sentiments that it is a masterclass in certain writing techniques. It's just so interesting to watch. Knowing if Father Flynn has molested students would defeat the purpose of this movie. But without this vital piece of information, the movie keeps the audience curious. However, there are scenes in the movie where the information the characters and the audience have moves and shifts along this spectrum or the scale that I described before. So narrative drive in this way is a scene-by-scene proposition. So for example, the audience sees William London smile and light a cigarette after he leaves school with a bleeding nose. The audience also sees the smile on William's face when Father Flynn leaves the parish. Now, this is dramatic irony because neither Father Flynn nor Sister Aloysius or Sister James see that. The audience therefore has more information than the characters. Now, what this does and how this works is really interesting. So when Sister Aloysius tells Sister James that she suspects William faked his nosebleed to get out of school, the audience knows that she is right. So it confirms that Sister Aloysius knows people or understands people and their motives. William's smile at the end of the film is mysterious. He knows something the audience doesn't. But the audience knows more, but they still don't know everything. So this is a really fascinating, just little snippets of narrative drive in this movie are really fascinating. When Sister James sends Donald Miller to see Father Flynn in the rectory, and when she sees the priest put a singlet in Donald's locker, this is suspense. The audience knows what Sister James knows. Now, Sister James is curious then about what's going on, and the audience is curious about what Sister James will do, and they are also concerned about Donald and potentially Sister James. Each scene in doubt uses a different narrative drive device to move the story forward and shift the audience along the scale between curiosity and concern. This constant movement is interesting and keeps the viewer engaged. And as I said before, mystery is the primary type of narrative drive in this movie, and all the information given to the audience is controlled so the mystery is maintained from beginning to end. And while the types of drive in the scenes vary, none of the information breaches or jeopardizes the mystery. Now, I'm guessing here, but the writer-director has approached this script with the rule that the viewer must never know if Father Flynn is abusing the boys or not. The second rule must be that the information presented is contradictory or is not conclusive one way or the other. And Sister Aloysius is a good example of what I mean. She's older and wise to the ways of some priests. She understands human nature, as we saw with William London, and she lies to protect Sister Veronica. So Sister Aloysius also saw William's response to Father Flynn in the courtyard, but she doesn't have any proof that Father Flynn is hurting the boys. Now, I did have a weird idea this week that each of the three main characters represents a different type of narrative drive device. And I dismissed it, but I couldn't help but come back to it every time I watched the movie. So I saw Father Flynn as mystery because he knows more about his treatment of the boys than anybody else. Sister James is suspense because the audience is relatively innocent like her and we see most of what she sees. And Sister Aloysius represents dramatic irony because the audience does know more than she does, but it doesn't stop her from taking action. Now, the lack or abundance of knowledge that each character has drives their behaviour. Sister Aloysius wants confirmation of her suspicions. Sister James wants to rid herself of knowledge. And Father Flynn either wants to hide or reveal himself. So that's, and I'll just say that character action being driven by that is not a path I want to go down this week, but I will explore it at some stage later in the season. So the three main points from this week's study that I want to share with you are that first, narrative drive moves the reader along the scale of curiosity and concern by withholding or revealing information. The point of view character is the reference point for information. A reader knows more, less, or the same as the point of view character. And third, and finally, there is an overriding emotion for a story, but each scene can use a different narrative drive option to maintain readers' interest. And it's up to the writer to control the information flow in the story. So that's what I have this week about narrative drive. Valerie, what's the action step for us to take away?
I want everyone to take a long, hard look at your characters and identify the conflict triangles, if any, in your story. If you do not currently have any conflict triangles, try to create three in your story and then see how they impact your scenes. See how you can bring your scenes to, or see how your scenes naturally start to come to life when you have tension moving in more than a back and forth direction.
All right, that wraps it up for this week. Join us again next week when we discuss what lies beneath. To support the show, please leave us a rating and review and tell your writer friends about us. For access to writing templates and worksheets and more than 70 hours of training, subscribe to Valerie's Inner Circle by visiting valeriefrancis.ca/innercircle and follow her on Instagram and Threads at Valerie_Francis. She also has a YouTube channel, so be sure to check that out at youtube.com/@ValerieFrancis. And if you'd like to get my tips about books to help you read like a writer, visit me on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Melanie Hill Author, or find out more about me at melaniehill.com.au. And remember, story theory doesn't have to be difficult. It's a tool to help you write more, not less. So take it one step at a time and have fun.